So I told him, what if I build a team and give you an account manager, and that account manager is the only person that you talk to, and the account manager runs everybody else, the ghostwriter, the video editor. And he said, I'll hire you. And then I said, give me
Okay.
1 month. After a month, I presented that. That was version one of Influence Podium, where we focus more on
Okay.
personal brands for CEOs.
Hello, everybody. Welcome again to another episode of the Low Code Podcast. Today we have with us Marty Sanchez. He runs a company called Influence Podium, and he has a very unique take on how B2B companies can grow and get better and more qualified leads. So Marty, thanks for joining us. And why don't you tell us a little bit more about what you do at Influence Podium?
Yeah, awesome, Jesus. Thank you so much for having me, first of all. The elevator speech of Influence Podium is we help B2B companies become media companies. What that really means is I started this agency because I believe that public relationships was the way that B2B companies used to need to communicate with their market, whether that's investors, whether that's new clients, new recruiting talent. And that wall was dead. PR, that wall that we needed at that point, died when we created new social channels that we can own and use that to communicate with the audience. The new world is the way that I see the world in 5 years, which is every B2B company is a media company. What that means is they're able to win the fight for attention by creating content at scale and content that is relevant to the audience and utilize those ownership channels to communicate with the market. So it was a realization of PR is that there needs to be a better way. This is where the future is going. We need to help B2B companies go from the old world to the new world.
Okay, so it's PR in the digital world.
Yeah, it's the PR 2.0, right? It's a PR where you don't need permission from Forbes or from Inc. magazine when you can do it yourself.
Okay, so we'll get back to this later, but can you tell us how you came up with the idea about this business, how you started?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm originally from Barcelona, but I went to college in the United States when I was 17. During college, I used to ghostwrite my classmates' papers for $10 a page because I needed some money and I played basketball, so I couldn't work extra time. From there, I realized that writing was something that I did very well. And I kind of forgot about it until after I graduated, took a job at finances, really hated it, went back to Spain, found that I could not find a job back in Spain, and went back to the one skill I knew I had, which was writing. I decided to do ghostwriting for CEOs because I thought that was the way to learn from these people and get paid to learn. Eventually, we found this client who had a ghostwriter, a video editor, a podcast editor, and two or three different roles. And he was super busy because he was running a $4 million agency plus his personal brand side on the side. And he asked me if I cannot continue to do this because I have too many people to manage. So I told him, what if I build a team and give you an account manager, and that account manager is the only person that you talk to, and the account manager runs everybody else, the ghostwriter, the video editor, and he said, I'll hire you. And then I said, give me 1 month. After a month, I presented that. That was version one of Influence Podium, where we focus more on personal brands for CEOs. And it's still something that we focus on, but we have evolved. But that's kind of how we started. We realized that there was a way to build personal brands at scale, and that people that were CEOs didn't have enough time to manage those and more people other than their company.
When was that? What year was that?
I believe that was about 3 years ago, maybe four years. So it's still relatively young. So I went from being a freelancer to then starting the agency. I would say about 3.5 years, maybe. And then the pandemic set it and it all kind of exploded for us in a positive way. But 3.5 years ago was the origin of Influence Podium as a company.
Right. But how do you start getting more clients after that first one?
Yeah, it's a good question. We realized that we needed to walk the talk, right? Like if we preach content, if we preach personal branding, if we preach CEOs sharing their mission and vision on social, we needed to do the same thing. So I started my podcast, Podium Stories. I continue to post on LinkedIn every day. I entered Twitter. So through LinkedIn, Twitter, and podcasting, those have been the three main content channels for us and the main avenue of inbound opportunities. Right now, I think we're about 450,000, 500,000 in annual recurring revenue, and it all comes from inbound opportunities and content and personal branding. So that's where all our clients are really coming from.
Wow, that's pretty cool. How many people are working in the agency today?
Yeah, we're a mix of full-timers with contractors. I believe we're about 4 to 5 full-time with a few contractors on top for certain things to be more flexible. We've scaled up in the past, and then we've had to scale down and scaled up in the past. So we're shifting those numbers on a mostly quarterly basis. But right now we're about that team of a core team of in-house that are the content strategists, the account managers, the people that really work on the client-facing roles, and contractors that we've vetted for the content creation, writing, video editing, podcasting, etc.
So how does it work? As far as I understand, the CEO, your client, does a video, and then you repurpose that video in many different content.
Right, it's a good question. So becoming a media company is the outcome, right? It's the North Star, it's where we're going. How we get there is a tailor fit process, because every company is a bit different. Some companies have competitive advantages, depending on your audience, the content channels might be different, the content types might be different. So the first thing that we do is really work on the strategic narrative. The strategic narrative is the overarching message to the content, right? For us, strategic narrative is what's really the old world, the new world, and how does our company become the vehicle from the old world to the new world? One thing we see a lot of companies make mistake is to put out a bunch of content, but it's not aligned. It doesn't have a North Star. So then the strategic narrative, I call it the lighthouse in a dark storm, right? Like that's where we're going. That's the content that needs to represent. Once we've identified—
Is that something that usually companies already have, or that's something that you help them figure out?
It's a good question. I think they think they have it, but it's not real. So they think, or it's not documented. Because it's not practical, right? Like they have a story, but it's not documented. It's not written. It's not very efficient. Like we have this origin story of how I created this company, but it's not the change that we want to see in the world. There needs to be a more focus on this. This is a thing that takes a month for really to work and to really put together. And this, we do the lower version. There's people that are even better than us. There's a guy called Andrew Raskin, who's the guy of strategic narrative. And his projects take months and months to define. We do the shorter version so that we can move to content. But this is the first thing that companies should be thinking about before they put out content. And from there, we define an audit, which is the best content channels and the best strategies to turn the strategic narrative into reality. Right? The content is a daily repetition of the strategic narrative.
So give me some examples of this lighthouse. Is that like the image that the company or the CEO wants to project about themselves, or is it something else?
It's ingrained in everything you do as a company, from marketing to recruiting, to the deck, to the sales.
But is it your vision? Your mission, or not that necessarily?
The simplest way is to kind of conceptualize it in a short conversation is, what was the old world that we used to live in? Why does this not work anymore? What's happened in the world that it changed, and that world is not the way that it should be moving forward? Then we talk about what's the new world? What's the vision that we see the world looking? And it's not about your company. It's about the market, right? Then... ideally, you already have some people that are winning playing that new world, and your company is the vehicle from the old world to the new world. Let me put it in like examples of influence podium. PR used to be the way that people used to communicate with the market. Something happened, which was the democratization of attention. Now we have Twitter, we have LinkedIn, we have Medium, we have podcasting. That changed, and we didn't have that before. So now we don't need Forbes and Inc. and Entrepreneur Magazine and all this outlets. We don't need that permission. So now we live in a permissionless world of content. Now we live in a world where you can become a media company and you don't need Forbes. You don't need that permission. So that's the new world. Old world, a change, new world. How does influence, it's not about influence podium. Influence podium, we just see that. And then we become the vehicle from the old world to the new world, right? For low code, the old world used to be, we need a team of 16 developers paying $300,000 every month. Every project takes months and months and months. And there's no iteration. We don't prove that the concept is real. The new world is you can use it with no code or low code because the change was these tools that happened. And your agency, in a way, is the vehicle from that world where companies used to live here to the new world where companies can now in a better future. So that's how we think about strategic narrative. Old world, change, new world, and then the vehicle from old world to the new world is your company. And then your content repeats that strategic narrative daily until it becomes real.
Okay, and then how do you create the content or how do you help the company create the content?
Yeah, so like I said, the tailor fit process, across our clients, we're seeing that there are two main channels that are I call it the most probable success path, right? Like the things that usually tend to have the most impact, which is podcasting, B2B podcasting, and B2B CEO thought leadership, whether that's on LinkedIn or Twitter, the personal brand of your CEO, creating thought leadership content on LinkedIn or Twitter. Those are the two things that we tend to see, and I'm generalizing, work the best for companies.
Don't you think that podcasting is a very crowded medium already?
I think it depends. So if for podcasting, your objective is to get millions of views and listeners, there's a big chance that, yes, it's too crowded. Your podcast is not special enough. That should not be the outcome of success. In my opinion, the benefits of podcasting are three. One, the relationship you build with your guests, right? If you start a podcast and start inviting people that are your ideal customer profile and use the podcast to turn relationships into sales conversations naturally and organically, that's a great way to do that. Okay. Benefit number two is the content creation. So you don't only get a pillar piece of content, but you can repurpose it into smaller clips for organic social. And then three is the audience that you're building, right, over time as you promote it, and you become the expert in the field because you have an audience.
Correct.
So those are the 3 to 4 benefits of podcasting. But if the audience is the icing on the cake, everything else is, if I've built 50 relationships with 50 ideal clients over a year, this is what percentage of probability do I have to close 10% of those?
So the goal is not amount of listeners.
It's business development at scale. It's business development at scale.
Okay.
And then everything else is on top. It's business development at scale plus content. For our numbers, what we've seen is people that do this usually tend to close about 10% of guests, whether it's the guests themselves or through referral partnerships. But it's not going to happen right away. It's a relationship. That's why we only recommend podcasting if you have a big average order value, right? Like if your customer lifetime value is over $24,000, then or $10,000, like that number depends for companies.
High price ticket, right? Yeah, right.
But if you have a large size value, then it starts to make more sense. If you make $19 a month for each client, that's not going to be a great way to do it.
Right.
So it's a way about what strategy is the most probable success path to impact, and then treating becoming a media company like a product roadmap. Like you know better than anyone, you don't start with the biggest product. You start with an MVP, and then you add things, you test things. So just like that, you can start with one or two initiatives like CEO, so leadership, and podcasting, and over time you can add articles and SEO, and you can add podcast guesting. You can add a few different content avenues and initiatives on top, but you don't want to do too many at the beginning. You want to start with one or two, get some results there, and start scaling without draining yourself of time and energy and money. So that's how we see it. It's a product roadmap to becoming a media company. It's not something you go from 0 to 100 right away.
Right. And then are you focusing, or do clients come from a specific industry? Or do you think that any industry fits like these services that you provide?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think Like I was saying before, clients that have large size deals are better fit.
Correct.
For this. I do think it works for everybody. It just means about how your distribution plays. Because if you get $19 a month, you need a big, big distribution to get there. So
let me ask you one question before you go on. Are you saying that these high price ticket items or businesses that sell these large deals, are you talking about just podcasting or content in general?
I think in general, it's easier the larger your deal size. Podcasting specifically, but in general, I think content makes the most.
Now, why podcasting more than like text or written content?
Great question. Because when you do podcasting, you're doing one-to-one, right? It's me and you right now. So if you get good distribution for the podcast, you get a larger audience. But like we were talking before, especially in the first years of doing podcasting, it's going to be the main benefit is the relationship with the guest. You can only have one guest at a time. Versus when you're creating thought leadership on LinkedIn or Twitter, you can get 2,000 views per every post. Now it's 1 to 2,000 versus 1 to 1. So that's how I think about it, especially podcasting, more high ticket. So in general, high ticket better, but it's not the one requirement. The one requirement I would say is you need to have a good strategic narrative. Without a good strategic narrative, everything kind of doesn't, it's just you're throwing stuff to the wall. With strategic narrative, now your message means something, and now you can really use that and leverage that to drive inbound revenue, lower customer acquisition costs, shorter sales cycles, higher win rates. But without that, you're just talking out loud. You need a message to your content.
Okay, so coming back to the question about industries, is it industry specific or not really?
I think we're industry agnostic. So not really an industry, B2B obviously, but within B2B, any vertical. What we're getting there, I think if we have the same conversation in 2 years, what I'm going to be able to tell you is in each industry, we have helped the leader of the market become the leader of the market. Right.
Yeah.
So for example, we work with MicroQuire, which is a marketplace to buy and sell agencies. They're disrupting startup acquisition, right? We're a small part, we're helping them do that. So that's a vertical. We help paid ads agency create a strategic narrative about data-driven growth and adaptive growth. That's what they call it.
Is that with Eddie? With Eddie Prado?
Lather.
Was that with Eddie? With Eduardo? No,
that's with an agency called Lather. They're doing great stuff.
Okay.
So with them, we're disrupting paid growth, right? Like how to achieve data testing paid growth. I think eventually we're going to be able to say in 10 industries, we've been able to achieve that. Right now we're only like 3 or 4 that you can see the people working and sending out. But eventually as Influence Podium grows, my vision as a company is to say 10 different verticals, all the leaders are working with us and partnering
our
with
clients,
us to achieve that. So industry agnostic, we like one per industry because we want to be the best in that industry.
Right. Okay. Now talking in general about content, sometimes it's hard for people to create content, right? Maybe they're not good at doing videos. Maybe they're not good at writing. And it's challenging for people to sometimes do marketing and even harder for a lot of people to do sales. So right now you mentioned that earlier, the democratization of, what do you call it?
Yeah, democratization of attention.
Right.
Yeah.
So there are so many options today as a consumer, right? And then there are a lot of, if we talk about podcasts, like very industry specific podcasts, so you can listen to the leader of your industry or your niche, whatever. Where do you see content going like in the next 5 years?
Yeah,
do you think that we will get to that like micro niche? Like we will listen podcasts related to no code apps built for the healthcare industry? Or where do you see the content in industry in general going to?
It's a great question. The way I see that, and I'm still earlier on these thoughts, so maybe in a year I'll give you a different answer. But I see a future where companies become Netflix-like. So they become this library of content that doesn't have to be content forever. I call it like short-term content. So instead of doing a podcast that is like interview-based forever, I think what we're going to start seeing is a more D2C approach to content, where we see more out-of-the-box, more creative content series that are not forever, but they're like seasons, right? Like and season one of 10 episodes, and then after that season finishes, we see if we want to do it or we want to test another channel. So I think of it as channel testing. We're going to start testing a lot of different channels and different concepts within the channel. And it's not going to be content that is meant to be forever. It's content that's meant to be tested for a specific season, for a specific number of episodes, or for short term. And then we're going to reevaluate that. I think of it like Netflix does. They buy a show, they put a season out, and if they test it, they analyze what the audience thinks of it, and then they decide, okay, we're going to scratch this show and do something else, or we're going to give them season two. So I think we're going to start seeing more of that, but it's going to be less work-related only. It's going to be more D2C, more fun, more entertainment, not just super specific with work. I think we're going to have both extremes, right? I think we're going
to
still...
But doesn't that require like a very large enterprise that has the budget to create content and then test and then see if it works?
It's a question that I'm thinking about. I would love to give you an answer. I don't want to give you an answer that I'm not sure. I think there are ways to do that in that don't require a 15 team of videographers and 12 video editors and all that stuff. I think we're going to find that companies become more creative in the concepts of their shows and the concepts of their content. It's not going to be this. We're going to have to innovate on how we entertain versus innovate on what topics we cover, right? The topics of low code, we're going to cover them, but how can we cover them in ways that nobody has covered them before? I think it's going to require more creativity. I think marketers are going to have to rely not just on the data of analyzing how it works, but on the creativity of artists, how to put a show together, a producer. Because when we're fighting for attention, we're not just fighting for attention between the competitors of low-code versus the competitors of Influence Podium. We're fighting with attention with Netflix. We're fighting with attention with YouTube. We're fighting with attention with basketball and football. So how we win this fight of attention, I think, becomes more open and more free game.
Okay.
And then we'll see how that plays. This is how, I know that my answer is a bit vague. I think I'm still working on understanding how that looks like. And I think Influence Podium is going to be a play and role in that. And we want to be one of the people that start creating concepts that are different. An example, for example, something that we're working on is this show where I'm a basketball player. So I have selected a few people that I know are CEOs and marketers that play basketball. So the show is going to be, we play one-on-one in basketball, and it's recorded while we play basketball and talk to each other. And there's an interview at the end of the one-on-one game, sitting on the stands. And the interview is a bit more court-related, but also personal. Right? It's the same interview show, but it's a bit different with the spin. Right? There's basketball involved. Yeah, it's more fun. It's more enjoyable. I think we're going to start seeing more creative stuff. And that's how B2B companies are going to be less serious, less professional. And
more accessible.
They're going to be more D2C, more like Netflix. So we'll see how, I think that's how we're going to see it.
Do you think that voice or audio, like podcast or audio content, will grow as fast as video content has grown?
I think the concepts of the types of content will continue to change. I think audio will continue to grow. We've seen companies like Spotify make big investments. I think it's good to have strategy there. But I don't think it's necessary to be exclusive. I think you can do both.
Correct.
And I think a lot of companies that repurpose content are going to be able to hit different types of content without overexpending time and financial resources. So repurposing is going to be key. It's about hitting all channels and being native to all channels. So we're going to see how that plays out. But audio, video, it's just the easiest way to consume content. We need to make it easier for our consumers to get their attention. And if audio is the way, then companies need to adapt. And we're seeing that trend.
What do you think about TikTok? Do you think that eventually it'll become a B2B channel, or will it never be a good channel for B2B?
This is a bit of a hypocritical of me, but I think it already is. And I say it's hypocritical.
It already is. Okay.
I'm not there, but
okay.
But I think, like, we talk internally about how to get there. We just have a hard time. Obviously, we're growing the agency. There's a lot of things on our plate, but we have to be there eventually. I think it already is a B2B channel. I think it's not going to be the number one source of inbound opportunities. I think, like we were telling before, right? It's a product roadmap. You're becoming a media company, it's a product roadmap. TikTok is part of that. Now, do you have to do that on day one? It's probably not initiative number one. It's initiative number six, right? Once you get to six, then yes, go in there. But what's the most success probable path?
How do you define which medium is the most important one? Is it the one that will get you clients first?
I think there's a matrix that I love to kind of put together. You find the initiatives by finding the low-hanging fruits, by finding channels that don't take too much of your economic resources, by finding channels that you have competitive advantages. For example, if you have a great audience on LinkedIn, and then you find the channel by reverse engineering where the audience attention is. Right, like if you work with marketers, Twitter is a great place, right? D2C, Twitter is a great place. If we're talking B2B, LinkedIn is probably a better place. So reverse engineering, where the audience attention is, where you can make the most impact, where you can get some quick wins to keep you excited, because I think this is important. There's an emotional factor to content. You have to see some wins.
Yes.
And then where you can don't have to spend all your budget from day one, you find that medium point in that matrix, and that's how you choose an initiative. And then you prioritize them. Once you hit one, you start considering the next, and then the next, and then the next. Once you get to TikTok, I recommend going there. It's just most likely it's not going to be initiative number one for B2B companies.
Right. Okay. That's interesting. I was doing my newsletter yesterday, and I mentioned how companies have to become media companies. And actually, if you look at Stripe, which is the largest payment processor in the world, at least digital, they have like a publishing section in their company, right? And I really don't know what they do, but I know that they do that, which is interesting because you would never imagine like Visa or MasterCard or American Express creating content in the way that Stripe does it.
Well, and Stripe, for example, they bought Indie Hackers. Indie Hackers is a community that it can be talked as a media company, right? Like that's Indie Hackers is basically a media company. Stripe realized that and bought them, right? That's how important building a media company is. So many companies are buying them. I have a list right here. We have Outreach buying Sales Hacker. We have HubSpot buying The Hustle. We have Zapier buying MakerPad. We have Salesforce Plus. We have MicroAcquire deciding bootstrappers.com, which is a media company by itself.
Yeah.
I just wrote a Twitter thread about that we're going to publish next week. So we're seeing all these companies that one can build their own media companies inside, like Stripe is doing, but they realize how important this is, and they're buying media companies so that they can buy that immediate attention and they can be the educator of the industry and they can position that. It's so important that all these companies are spending millions and millions of dollars on acquiring that. Now, if you haven't raised 100 million, you're probably not going to be able to acquire it. You have to build it yourself.
Right.
And that's why I think we can help. Right? If you can acquire them, you don't need us. But if you need to build it yourself, that's how I think Influence Podium can help.
How long does it take for clients of yours to see results?
Depends on what you mean by results. Right. If the result,
what are the objectives in different companies that you work with?
Yeah, I think that's a individual question to each client. I think that's
okay.
If the outcome is become a media company, I personally believe that you are a media company the second you create a strategic narrative and get an initiative and start executing. You're already a media company. Now, like we're saying, right? Media company initiative one versus initiative 15. There's certain levels to play, and it's an abstract. So if the outcome is that, strategic narrative plus one initiative and content creation, you're already that. Now, for what we're seeing, which is really building a brand, and when you start seeing inbound opportunities, when you start seeing lower customer acquisition costs, shorter sales cycles, higher win rates, usually we think that between 6 to 9 months is a good time period to start seeing that. For us, at our company, we're seeing better results on year three that we have seen in year one and year two, right? And in year 10, we're going to see even better results. So it's a long-term
It's plan. Compounding. It's like blogging, yeah. Right? It's a compounding effort.
And then the one thing I would recommend for people listening is, especially the first 6 to 9 months, you need to look for qualitative data versus quantitative. Like people that come to a sales call and tell you, hey, I was listening to your podcast, or I saw your tweet, mm-hmm. or I saw your LinkedIn. This is hard data to quantify. Or somebody, my friend told me that his friend told him that your newsletter was great and thought I should talk, right? Like you cannot quantify that.
Right.
Even if people like read your newsletter and then Google low code and then sign up for a strategy call through Google, your analytics tell you SEO. The reality is
correct.
Your LinkedIn or your newsletter or your Twitter, all the other stuff. So attribution is really hard. So I think the most important thing is to look for qualitative data points.
Correct.
And then when you find that, you realize you're onto something. Eventually, you start seeing great data, but qualitative data should carry you forward. Like I was saying, it's very sentimental to work on content.
Yes.
So you need to keep your spirits high, and that's how you keep them high.
Yes. I was speaking with someone with a lead like a couple weeks ago, and I asked him, how did he find us?
Right.
And he said, I saw you somewhere. I was like, Twitter, Facebook, podcast, YouTube, right? There are so many channels. You have to do today, you have to do everything. And I think that you do a great job helping companies with like their CEO is super busy growing the company, getting sales, whatever. Helping them create a lot of content, which is something fundamental. And yeah, which I completely agree. You end up being a leader of your industry, a leader of your niche, and that will help you one way or another to close leads.
Yeah.
Either people find you from somewhere else and then they see you that you're the industry leader, or they find you through that content. And then, so you have to add a lot of things.
Yeah, and the benefits.
Because sales are not that linear.
Exactly. And benefits even go, especially in B2B, right? Because the sales process is so complex and so many people in the middle. But the benefits of this, I think, go beyond sales, right? When you start getting people come to your company because one, they believe in your message, which is your strategic narrative, and two, they like your content and that's the type of company that they want to work with. For these fast growing venture backed companies, recruiting is even more of a challenge than sales, right? So this is helping your recruiting pipeline as well. When investors come to you and say, for your next round, count me in because they read your article, that's another benefit that is not sales related, but it's equally important to making you success. When somebody wants to acquire you, and now they're not only buying a company with a product, but they're buying a media company with a great
brand. Right.
Now your multiples are much higher. So when you start thinking about, should I put $2,000 to $10,000 on this every month, then you start realizing that this makes sense long term. It's not going to make sense by February, but eventually.
Right.
But this is the mindset that for the people. I think mindset for building a media company is the most important thing. The skills, the team, everything else, you can figure it out. I can help you with everything else. I cannot help you with mindset. When I say I mean my company or people working on this space. So yeah, that's how we're saying it. Benefits go across the board. But yeah, it's not just sales, it's recruiting, it's funding, it's acquisitions. It's a good place to be. It's a good place to be for sure.
Yeah, the company grows with content.
Yeah, your brand.
On every single department.
Yeah, people can replicate your product. I can hire.
Yes, exactly.
You know, but it's hard to replicate your brand.
Correct.
It's much easier, or your strategic narrative, or being the first market, the first person in that market with that strategic narrative. It's harder to replicate. Again, it's not a fit for everybody. I do think every B2B company will be that. I don't think every B2B company is ready to be that. But the companies that want to be the leader in the space, this is how you get there.
Right. That makes sense. Marty, where can people learn more about your company and yourself?
Yeah, my LinkedIn, my Twitter are good places where I'm putting out content. InfluencePodium.com is our website. My email is marty@influencepodium.com. I always happy to chat about this. You can tell I'm passionate about it. I could talk about this for hours. Sorry for rambling, but Jesus, I really appreciate you having me on.
No, thanks, and I appreciate you coming.
Absolutely. My pleasure.